Welcome to Frictionless Marketing, an exploration of how modern marketers are building their brands, reaching their audiences, and thriving in this post-advertising world. Today, we're excited to have Trista Morrison, Chief of Staff to the CEO and Chief Corporate Affairs Officer at Voyager Therapeutics. Trista is a seasoned biopharmaceutical executive advisor with over two decades of experience in corporate affairs and stakeholder management. Her career spans a range of significant roles, including Chief Corporate Affairs Officer for Saniona and Vice President of Communications and Patient Advocacy at Sobi in North America. At Voyager, Trista plays a pivotal role in shaping the company's strategic vision, managing investor relations, and driving corporate communications. She has a rich history in facilitating effective communications at various stages of company development, from preclinical to commercial, and has worked extensively in both the U.S. and Europe. Trista's expertise extends to areas such as DE&I, corporate social responsibility, and patient advocacy, reflecting her comprehensive approach to corporate affairs. In this episode, Trista shares her extensive experience, tracing her journey from early days in public relations agencies to her current leadership position at Voyager. She delves into the nuances of storytelling in the biopharma industry, the transition from reporter to corporate leader, and the integration of communications with corporate strategy. Trista offers a very unique perspective on the evolution of corporate communications in biopharma and provides insights into the challenges and opportunities associated with this dynamic field. Join us in exploring these fascinating topics and more with Trista Morrison.
Trista, thank you very much for joining us. I'm excited to speak with you today.
I am so excited too. Thank you for having the call.
So I thought maybe if it's all right with you, could we start by just talking about your career trajectory? Because I think you've kind of touched, a lot of different facets of the industry. And it might be interesting to just start off by talking about, what that's looked like for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I would be happy to. So I've been very fortunate. I've been in communications and corporate affairs for biopharma companies for more than 20 years. And I've had a lot of opportunities to learn and grow in a lot of different areas. So I started my career on the agency side. And, I often recommend that to younger folks who are asking for advice about starting their careers, because I just think that an agency gives you such incredible breadth of experience. Once you are in-house, you are focused pretty narrowly on the one company that you are working for and the things that are immediately relevant to them. And when you're at an agency, you have dozens of clients. And so you have the opportunity to learn from companies who are preclinical, who are clinical, who are commercial, who are doing cardio, who are doing neuro, who are private, who are public, right? And I think it's such an awesome way to get that breadth of experience at the start of your career. So I've been so grateful for that always. Then I became a reporter at BioWorld for a while. That was definitely a passion play. I love storytelling. I feel like that's really the core of who I am and have always been. And just, the opportunity to really focus on that and really focus on writing was something that I was willing to take a massive pay cut in order to explore. I think it was such a valuable experience getting to be on the reporter side and really understand what makes a good story. And I will also say that working for a daily newspaper taught me that there is no such thing as writer's block, because you just got to get it done every day.
I can only imagine.
Yep. So I went from there in-house. My first in-house role was at Ironwood Pharmaceuticals. I had the incredible opportunity to join that company just a few months before the PDUFA date, right? The FDA decision on the drug that they had been working on for 14 years. And so it was really incredible to be a part of that journey as that company was transitioning from a research and, discovery and development organization into a commercial organization. And it's an incredible transition. And it was so exciting to be part of that journey. I started there doing corporate comms and both internal and external. And then over time, I expanded into product comms there. So I still sat in corporate, but I had a dotted line to the commercial organization, and I got to be a part of all the brand planning and the commercial leadership team meetings. And so that was a really great opportunity. From there, I went to Sobi, which is a European rare disease company. I did both corporate and product there. Sobi had a number of FDA-approved products. And so I did corporate and product there and picked up patient advocacy, which patient advocacy, when you're working in the rare disease space in particular, is such an incredible opportunity. If anyone ever has a chance to be in that space, I would say take it. It's fantastic. And then I moved to Saniona, which was another European rare disease company. And there I was doing corporate, and we didn't actually have product because Saniona was still in the clinic, but I was doing corporate, I was doing advocacy, and I picked up investor relations. That was a great opportunity. It was a company that was publicly traded in Sweden and was interested in expanding to a US NASDAQ listing. So that was a great journey to be on there. And now I am at Voyager. And so Voyager is a publicly traded NASDAQ listed company focusing on neurogenetic medicine. And my role here is I run corporate affairs, which includes corporate comms. Again, we're preclinical, so we don't really have product comms yet, but corporate comms, advocacy. I share investor relations with our CFO. And I'm also chief of staff to our CEO. So that's been a new role for me and has been a great learning experience, getting me a little bit more, I'd say, out of the comms vertical and more into corporate strategy.
Right. So people who are listening and thinking about a career in pharma comms, you pretty much hit every single possible step along the tour there. And the one thing you did not mention, actually, is that the Ironwood experience, in fact, ended up being a co-promote situation, you know, with Big Pharma, which also is, of course, one of those kind of wild cards. And that's where we first started working together.
That's absolutely right. Yep. And I've never worked directly in Big Pharma. The companies I've worked with have always been a bit on the smaller side, but I've had some great opportunities to kind of touch the Big Pharma space through, like you said, through partnerships. And also when I have been on the consulting side and on the agency side, you know, having some great opportunities to interact with Big Pharma there too.
And you just mentioned, you know, when you were on the consulting side and in the middle there, you did have a consultancy, which was called, if my game is right, PR with Purpose.
Yes, that is correct.
And so can you share with us a little bit about, you know, I guess let's tell us a little bit about what you did as a consultant with PR with Purpose. And then let's talk maybe about how you're ensuring that that purpose remains a central tenet now with Voyager and, you know, in the rest of your endeavors.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. So I got into consulting sort of by accident. It was when I came out of Sobi. So I actually ended up getting laid off from Sobi, which is one of those things that happens in the biopharma industry. And at first I was looking for another full-time in-house job. And then I was speaking with some folks at a PR agency, and they had kind of said to me, they were interested in me coming in-house with them or coming to work for them full time. And I had said, you know, I don't really want to go back to agency quite yet. I don't think I'm at that point yet in my career. And they said, well, would you consider just doing some consulting for us? Because we could really use, you know, some senior level help. And, you know, it's going to take 6 months to get another full-time in-house C-level VP or C-level position. So, you know, how about we consult in the interim? And I said, oh, yeah, sure. Okay, that makes sense. So I started consulting, and I would spend about half of my time doing work for the agency for their clients and the other half of my time doing my own consulting and my own projects. And some of those were for, you know, separate biotech companies that I just had relationships with people at and who needed some help. And then I also started working with some nonprofits in that context as well. So that was a great experience. So, and then I did that again when I came out of Saniona, and I was between Saniona and Voyager. I did some consulting again. And I think, you know, I loved consulting. It's awesome to have a little bit more control, I think, of your schedule. And it's something I definitely see myself going back to at some point in the future. I had some really great advice when I was consulting, and then I got the offer from Saniona, and I was kind of torn about whether to stay consulting because I'm loving it so much or whether to go back in-house. And another consultant, he gave me some really good advice. He was like, consulting will always be there for you. He said, you know, I've been a consultant for 20 years and I've gone in-house 3 times in the middle. You can always come back to it. And so that's what I did. And I guess to circle back to your question about purpose, you know, I've always felt like communications has got to be rooted in strategy, right? It's got to start with achieving your corporate goals. Like what are you trying to achieve as a company? What do you need to achieve to be successful? And how can communications really support that? Because if your communications is not helping you achieve your corporate goals and your strategic goals and your vision, then like, it's kind of just vanity press. And I'm not really sure why you're doing it, right? So the purpose part felt really important to me and to kind of what I believe. And that's why, Paul, I was so excited to reconnect with you and to hear, you know, some of the things you've been talking about in your podcast. And I just got your book. And so I'm only like chapter one. So I can't, you know, I can't say too much, but so far I love it because I feel like you are also so focused on purpose.
Well, we are, because we think, we being, you know, obviously the whole team here, but myself included. And we also interpret it through a similar lens to what you just said, which is purpose isn't just about, you know, doing good in society. It's also about what is the purpose of the company? You know, what is the purpose of the business? And you can't do good in society if you don't, you know, achieve your business purpose first and foremost.
Yeah, 100%. I agree. Purpose it's important on both levels. And it's so funny because I mentioned earlier that like storytelling was at the heart of kind of how I define myself and who I think I am and have always been, like since I was 4 years old and writing stories about unicorns. And then I heard you, talking on a podcast about story making. And you were talking about like the difference between storytelling and story making. And I'm sure you can sum that up better than I ever could, but I heard that and I was like, oh, no, that's what I am. I'm a story maker. So ever since from that, I feel like I totally have to shift my narrative now.
You know, it's funny because when we landed on that terminology, right, it was very much the way you described it, which is we were looking at all of the work we had done over the previous year or two and saying, this feels fundamentally different from what I see when I judge awards in the PR industry and things like that. How would we explain what makes it different? And that is what it was. It was a more active role in making the story as opposed to telling the same story again and again or using a different spokesperson to retell the same story. Anyways, I'm glad you picked up on that. And I'm glad that you identify with it as well, all the way back to your unicorn days. I take it you did not make any unicorns, though.
No, I didn't. But I just, yeah, I loved the way that you phrased that. And then even like, so in the beginning of your book, you know, you give some examples about like Patagonia and you talk about like the reason that they are viewed as like a really authentic company who lives their values and that people really resonate with their brand is because they actually do that, right? Like they're actually doing the work. Every decision that they make in their business strategy, right? From where they're sourcing materials to how they're, you know, accessing labor to how they're shipping to, I mean, every single thing they're doing is true to those values.
That's right. That's right. And it's a little bit of a preview here, but sort of the next evolution of how we're talking about this is that brands need to move. And this is talking about commercial brands now, not the corporate entity as much, but you know, so much emphasis is put on brand identity, which is what a brand looks like and sounds like and the experiences the brand has, which are all relatively external things, right? Where it comes from, versus brand character. And brand character is what you can rely on it for, what actions it will take, what it'll stand for. You know, does it provide great service? Is it trustworthy? All those kinds of things. Anyways, so yeah, you can see that we're definitely in the same area here.
Yes. And that's like one of the reasons I was so excited when you asked me if I wanted to come talk about this stuff with you on your podcast, because like what you're talking about on the product side is, I think, 100% relevant on the corporate side as well, and in patient advocacy and really in all aspects of corporate affairs, right? Because, I mean, I've had, you know, leaders come to me and they say, you know, how can we want to look like a more patient-centric company? Like, how can we launch a campaign that makes us look like a more patient-centric company?
And it's like, you see.
So, well, let's start with like, what are you actually doing to be patient-centric? Where are you incorporating the patient viewpoint in your strategy? And how are you, you know, letting that inform your strategic decision making and the decisions that you're making about the business, right? Like where, like, it's kind of like you got to take it back to the basics there and say, well, like, yeah, how are you actually being patient centric? And then we can think about how to talk about that, right? And it's totally the same in corporate, I think, in corporate communications and corporate strategy. Like, I can't tell you how many times I feel like in my career, a CEO will say to me, like, I hate our website. It doesn't show who we are. And my reaction is always, so who are you? And it's amazing how often that question gives people pause, right? And I'm like, okay, so I think that's the problem, right? You really have to figure out, who is this company today? And where are you trying to get to in 3 to 5 years, right? And that's like your LRP process, your long range planning, which is a strategic process. How are you going to get there? You got to get tight on that. Like, you have to know, what is your vision? What is your mission? What are your 3 year, you know, goals as a company? And then what are your 1 year corporate goals? Like, you have to know that before you can communicate it. And so oftentimes I feel like when you're feeling like your communications doesn't really represent, you know, who you are as a company, it's often because the strategy isn't quite crisp enough, or maybe doesn't fit with how you've evolved. Cause like in biotech, things move fast, right? Products succeed, products fail, products are partnered, somebody in licenses or acquires something. I mean, things change quickly. And so in my mind, you sort of always have to be thinking about, is that the way we're talking about our company, does that still reflect the strategy that we are actually trying to execute here, and vice versa?
It's interesting. I mean, I agree with everything you're saying, and I think it applies well beyond biotech. Although you can argue in biotech, you know, typically smaller companies, smaller teams, and a CEO or chairman usually exerts a lot more direct influence over the decisions everybody makes, right? It's a little bit more direct line as opposed to these big sprawling organizations. But what you're reminding me of is something that has felt very, dissonant for me ever since I entered the communications industry. Is, it's like in every one of these industry focused senior level conversations. So picture things like the Arthur Page Society, et cetera, where you've got the most senior people in communication sitting around a table. And inevitably, the conversation always turns to griping about having a seat at the table, right? And how communications needs to have a quote unquote seat at the table. And it's happening, right? Increasingly, people in our line of work have a seat at the table. I mean, you're the chief of staff for the CEO in your company. But it's also like, well, what are you going to do with that seat? Let's stop talking about like wanting a seat at the table, which in many cases manifests as just offering opinions on things. Right. So there's a business strategy conversation, and then the communications person weighs in on like, well, how will, you know, how is this going to play, you know, with employees or investors or, you know, whatever. So you're kind of just there to offer opinions, as opposed to what you're saying is you're driving the strategy and saying, not the sense that you're necessarily writing it, you know, like you're part of it. And you're saying, if I can't communicate this clearly enough, you're not there yet.
Right. Yeah, no, I think that's, you're absolutely right with that. And I have often found in my career that communications is a forcing function for strategy, right? Because a lot of times it's not until you get asked the question that, like, you know, somebody says, like, what's your approach to drug pricing? And then you all look around the table at each other and you're like, what is our approach to drug pricing?
How do we feel when they do a report and...
Right. So it's like, it's so often I find that like, it's a great communications is absolutely a forcing function for strategy. And it's interesting that whole seat at the table that you bring up, you know, I mean, I do sympathize with that. And I will say that I have been really intentional in my career in moving towards that and looking for that. And advocating for that, right? Like I have been offered positions that don't report to the CEO and I have not taken those positions, right? Like I have been offered positions that, you know, aren't on the leadership team and I have not taken those positions. I mean, I think that it's a little, I don't know which is the chicken and which is the egg, but you do have to have a seat at the table. You have to know what's happening in the organization to be effective as a communicator, right? Like you're only as effective as the information that you have. And sometimes like I've kind of tried to explain this to CEOs during the interview process or, you know, to folks as I'll say, okay, so look, the reason that the Harry Potter books are so awesome is because when like the big reveal happens in chapter 35, your reaction is like, oh my God, of course, I can't believe I didn't see that coming, but it all makes perfect sense, right? You don't get that reaction if you don't leave the wand on the table in chapter 2. So like, you can't call me at chapter 30 and say, oh, hey, I need you to write a press release on this thing that's about to happen. Like, we need to be talking about where this company is going way back at chapter 2. And we need to be leaving those wands on the table, right? And that's a great analogy. It's tricky because you don't want to get ahead of yourself, right? Like you don't want to be kind of talking about things you haven't actually done yet, but you can leave breadcrumbs. You've got to help people understand how you're thinking about where you're going. So that when you do that big BD deal at chapter 35, you don't want your analysts and your investors being, what the? Like, why didn't they do that deal? You want the reaction from the community to be, oh my God, what a smart deal. Of course. Like, of course they did that. That's so smart. That makes perfect sense, right? Like,
it's great. Yeah. It's sort of full circle to the point about storytelling and story making because for me, a lot of times in the middle between chapter 2 and chapter 30, you don't actually have news, right?
Yep.
Like chapter 30 is going to be the news, but there's nothing in the middle there that's actually newsworthy. And so you can do all the owned media you want and all the corporate narratives and all the storytelling on your website and, you know, executive visibility and all that stuff. And that's part of it. It's part of what we do. But you're not really generating any attention or changing that much of how people think about you. And that's where the story making fills the gap is if you have no news, what are you going to do that people would talk about? So
yes.
I love this idea of leaving wands on the table, you know, along the way.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because I think, you know, that story making concept of like filling the gap, is one way to look at it. But like the other thing where I would maybe give like kind of the opposite viewpoint on that is like coming back to what we said about purpose is like, what are you trying to achieve right now, right? Like, what as a business are you trying to achieve? Because, like, you need to continue to leave the breadcrumbs, right? You need to continue to be a part of the conversation. You don't want to, like, quote unquote, go silent. But on the other hand, I mean, like, this, and this kind of makes me think of investor relations. It's like, I don't know, like, we're well funded for a long period of time. We're focused on long-term goals. Like, is there, like, do we need to have a really near-term focus on the share price? Because, like, we're not going to need to access that for a while. I mean, you have to, like, you have to always, of course, be respectful of your investors. It is their money, and you got to try to create an environment where people have on-ramps and off-ramps, and they can make their individual choices about what fits for them in their investment models. But, like, it's like, think about the corporate goals. Like, maybe a better example is, like, you know, I worked in a rare disease community at Sobi, and, you know, we have these amazing stories, and sure, we could spend a lot of money telling stories about the people in this community and their experiences. But to what end? Because this is a ultra, ultra rare disease. There's 1,000 people who have this disease in the US, and every single one of them is already in the advocacy community and in our network. And, like, there is no chance. If you go, you can go out and you can do, you know, radio media tours and satellite media tours, and you can try to get this disease talked about on the Today Show. There is zero chance that there is a person who is sitting out there with this disease undiagnosed who's going to say, oh my God, that's what I have. And the reason that there's zero chance is because if they weren't getting treatment by the age of 4, they would have passed away already. So, like, it's just, you have to, like, really, I think, really think about the business need too, as, like, why, you know, what are you trying to achieve in telling these stories? Because if it's not going to support the business need, maybe you actually don't need to be spending money doing it. Maybe you could put that money towards something else. You know, like, for us, we talked to the advocacy group about, what do you guys really need? And they said, look, our disease is on newborn screening. And we know that every one of the 50 states is doing it. Like, we know every state is doing this. But there's two ways to do the screen. And one of them is more accurate than the other. And what we don't know is which states are using which approach. So, okay, well, let's spend our money on that. Let's give you a grant so you guys can go out and do that research and get those answers. And then you can do an advocacy campaign aimed at, like, actually trying to educate the states who aren't using the more accurate approach as to why it's important, and trying to help them get the funding they need to do that, right? Like, that's where you can really make a difference.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. I mean, it's that same, you know, tendency towards action, right? So here's another, I guess, twist in the story, because so Voyager is a gene therapy company, right?
Yep. Well, genetic medicine. So our
genetic medicine.
Technically, neurogenetic medicines. Our lead product is actually an antibody, but yes, we are known for our gene therapy expertise, and most of our pipeline is gene therapy. That is correct.
So if you think about kind of the role communications plays in laying the tracks ahead of the train of a company and even industry, gene therapy is certainly one of these that's really, you know, it's still in its early stages. But you could see a world where it either becomes the future of medicine, or it goes the way of nuclear energy or GMOs, where society shapes a narrative about it that's not really science-based, right? And yep, that narrative ends up holding the whole industry back or derailing the train, so to speak. And yet, we don't have a mechanism through which, you know, the companies that are in this sector combine to tell the sector's story pretty much anywhere, including nuclear energy, right? Including GMOs. And in the rare cases where we try to do that through associations like the Pharma Association, you know, PHRMA in DC or whatever, it's usually relatively ineffective, not as effective as we are at telling our own story as a company. And so the company's narrative ends up contributing to sort of laying that foundational, you know, laying those tracks, so to speak. So I guess I'm curious now, having said all of that, like what your thoughts are when it comes to, sure, you got to meet the business's objectives, but then making sure you don't get derailed by this sort of larger industry perception down the road.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think in my experience, this is where as like, you know, a chief of staff or a senior level communicator who's working really closely with the CEO, I think this is where sometimes you really have to kind of take your CEO's lead on where they want to prioritize their time and energy and the company's time and energy, right? Because I think sometimes you have leaders who they are very, very passionate about, you know, being on the cutting edge of talking about, you know, whatever the new approach is or the new technology or the issue, right? Whatever it is. And that's something that they have a lot of personal passion around, and it fits really well with something that the company is trying to achieve in the future. And so then, yeah, absolutely. And then I think your job as a communicator is to support that and find ways to try and tell that story and do that education work. But I think probably more commonly, you kind of have to think about where you are in the industry, right? Because I mean, at Voyager, we're a preclinical company. We've got like 160 employees. Like, I don't think that trying to educate the world on gene therapy is, I mean, it's a fantastic goal and it's noble and it needs to be done. But I don't think it's where we can invest our incredibly limited time and resources when there are companies like Novartis, who has, you know, an incredibly successful FDA-approved gene therapy product, and there are companies like Sarepta, right? There are companies who are so much bigger than us and so much better resourced and can really lead in those conversations. So I kind of feel like, you know, sometimes you just have to also, it depends on your CEO. It depends on the company and the stage that you're at. I think there's a lot of things that you have to kind of consider.
It sounds very much like know thyself, right?
Yeah.
And it's interesting. There's a lot of different sort of ways I think that plays into our work is, you know, sometimes communications, you can pick whatever analogy you want here, but can get you over your skis or whatever, where the communications team is trying to create a perception that the business doesn't necessarily reinforce. Right. And in those cases, of course, it's same thing of know thyself.
Yeah.
You know, that's sort of the first act here of being able to communicate well, kind of going back to knowing the strategy, but also being realistic about where you are in the pursuit of that strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's right on the mark.
So I realize we're coming up on time here. I have one question I kind of want to come back to that brings us back to the beginning a little bit. Is you started out by saying that one of your strong recommendations to people entering our industry is to start in agency life. Later in the conversation, you mentioned that when you were going to Voyager, you felt like a return to agency, you weren't ready for it yet, which, you know, certainly implied that that might happen later in your career or at a future time. So is that something that's like, is there an arc there that you're recommending, or is that just kind of where you're at personally right now?
Yeah, I think that's just my own personal journey. I think that, you know, what I have found is that sometimes when you are running comms and you're in-house and you're in smaller biotechs, it can get a little lonely, you know, because it can be hard being kind of the only person in the organization who really understands what you're doing and why and the value that you're trying to create and kind of constantly having to educate your peers and your boss and your board. And it's just, it's, I think being in-house is incredible because you get super, super emotionally bought in to your company, or at least I do, right? Like when I'm in-house, I am all in and I am 100% emotionally connected to that job and that company and that mission. And, you know, I put everything I have and then some into it and into being successful. And one of the things that I really liked about when I was consulting was, especially when I was consulting and working with an agency, suddenly I was like surrounded by all these people who were communications experts. And I was like, oh, this is so fantastic. Like they're challenging me.
I'm not alone.
I know, right? Like they have ideas. They're thinking about things differently than I'm thinking about them. Like, this is awesome. Like I loved that. I found that just really energizing and invigorating. And I thought to myself, that's something that I want more of. I also really I loved being a strategic advisor to folks versus being sometimes, you know, like, I'd say like elbows deep, knee deep, shoulder deep in the operationalizing of it, which is, they're just different experiences. And I think they're both super, super valuable to have. And I have been on the operational side for a long time now. So I am, yeah, like for me personally, I'm kind of thinking that maybe that will be my next step. But honestly, you never know, right? Like I just keep trying to kind of focus on what's right in front of me and get that done and then see what comes. I mean, I will say that every single job I've had throughout my entire career has come through networking. I've never submitted a resume cold and had success. So I think that's, you know, I guess if there's another piece of advice to, you know, folks out there and building your career, your network is so important, right? I mean, the way that I got my job at Voyager was because I was having coffee with this gentleman, Michael Higgins, who he, a long time ago, was the CFO at Ironwood, and he hired me. He actually was the hiring manager who hired me into Ironwood Pharmaceuticals all those years ago. And, you know, he since has moved on. He got into the venture capital world. He started doing boards. And so he and I are having a coffee, and he said, and talking about, you know, my journey and his journey. And he says, you know, I'm chairman of the board of this company, Voyager. And we just hired a new CEO, and he's a first time CEO. And I think you can be really helpful to him. I think the two of you might work really well together. I'd like to introduce you.
That's the magic.
So I just think, you know, the network is, it's super great, and definitely take every opportunity to build it and nurture it.
I think that's really good advice. And obviously it applies both for potential job opportunities, but then also on the media side and everything else that we do is both communications based, but also very relationship based.
Like the fun part too, right? Like that's the, I guess to like bring it all back to purpose and like action and making versus telling. And I mean, that's the most satisfying part, honestly, right? Is just getting to have these relationships, right? And like now I'm at the point where like I just got back from the JP Morgan Healthcare Conference. And like, I mean, there are so many people who we've been in each other's orbit for more than 20 years now, right? And they've been on agency and reporter and in-house, and I have. And it's like just sitting down and nurturing those relationships is honestly the most enjoyable part of the journey for me at this point.
I could not agree more. And I'll also just add to that, the earlier you do it, the more valuable it is down the road. It's just like paying into a 401k. So, well, Trista, thank you so much. This has been great. And I'm sure people are going to really enjoy hearing your insights. And we thank you for your time and for sharing them with us here today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. This has been such a fun conversation, and I look forward to more in the future.
Likewise. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Frictionless Marketing. If you enjoyed this episode, you might want to check out Paul's best-selling book, Friction Fatigue: What the Failure of Advertising Means for Future-Focused Brands. In Friction Fatigue, Paul explains to readers why advertising is broken and provides a frictionless marketing framework to help build your brand in an era where advertising is no longer the answer. You'll learn how to protect your business against competitors and lead the pack with fresh marketing strategies that will help you prepare for a future where the consumer rules. Friction Fatigue is now available on Amazon and as a book on tape on Audible.com. Thanks again for listening.